The PFL is live from Chicago, April 19th, with welterweights and featherweights taking center stage. In the main event, former Bellator welterweight champion Andrei Kereshkov takes on knockout artist Magomed Umalatov. And 2022 PFL world champion Brendan Loughnane looks to start his 2024 off with the bang versus submission specialist Pedro Carvalho. Don't miss the action. Friday, April 19th, live at 10 p.m. Eastern Time on ESPN and ESPN+.
The 82-game preseason is in the books, and it's finally time for the real season. Don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. From the play-in tournament through the finals, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SMASH. New customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's code SMASH, only on DraftKings. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
That's it. MMA. BKB. BKB. MMA. Oh, that's right. So I guess we're here to talk about MMA. I guess most of the viewers are tuning in right now to this UFC Vegas 32. Corey Sandhagen versus TJ Dillashaw live preview show. Thank you everyone for tuning in. This is the you can see my face now. This is I, Alexander K. Lee. Normally we have Mike here on host duties, but he is on site in Tampa at BKFC 19. He's bringing you that white hot coverage all week, so you'll have to settle with me as your host. But luckily, I am joined by the expert of experts, the computer, Jose Youngs.
My computer? Why?
Your memory is immaculate.
Okay, I'll take it.
Also, you are an emotionless husk, is also what I was getting at, but more so the memory thing.
Yeah, that's fair. That's a good assessment.
And of course, producer extraordinaire, E. Casey Lydon.
I am a robot.
What a nice shirt.
I'm a professional. I dress up for preview shows.
Well... Oh, I love the energy of this show already. Guys, we have
MMA. You know what it stands for? I don't know.
What
I'm
does it stand for?
I'm asking. Okay. I have no idea. Yeah, okay. I hear people say it a lot.
I hope people are tuning in because we're finally going to answer what MMA stands for after all these years. Maybe nothing. I think it's like KFC. You know, KFC obviously used to stand for Kentucky Fried Chicken, but legally KFC is just KFC now. Like copyright is just KFC. Anyway, it's a whole branding thing, but obviously, yeah. So MMA, we're here to talk about it. We have what I think is a good card. Most people in the media, we seem to be kind of excited about this card from what I'm seeing. So I don't know if we need to sell it to a broader audience, but
that is the main event. Job has journalists.
No, we're not. Of course
selling.
Not.
That's the UFC's.
We're not PR.
Job. Stop doing the UFC's job, AK.
We are not PR. Here to talk about UFC Vegas 32, which you can purchase on ESPN. If you're not an ESPN Plus subscriber, make sure to subscribe to ESPN Plus. You get all these cards.
How much is it per month?
I don't know in U.S. dollars because it's like
only,
almost like 30. It's like $30 Canadian.
$30
what?
A month? How much? Hold on, you're paying
Casey,
$30
Casey,
a month.
But Casey, we got to work in our We got to work in our script here. Hold on. Oh, yeah. What? How much is it?
Just one easy payment of $5 a month.
What? Are you kidding? $5 a month? Oh, okay. I'll call right away. I don't know. No, we don't even have ESPN Plus in Canada. That's actually the joke.
You guys don't even know how to spell SportsCenter.
All right, listen. I can't. That's true. It is confusing for people. Let's talk about the card, guys. Okay. One thing that doesn't need selling the card is, of course, the main event, two-division bantamweight. Oh, man.
Oh,
I'm on fire
close
today.
One.
Oh, two-time UFC bantamweight champion TJ Dillashaw returns from a from a two-year suspension for after testing positive for EPO. I'm sure if anyone doesn't know about it, UFC has done a fine documentary on Fight Pass documenting his struggle to come back from this this two-year suspension. But he fights Cory Sandhagen, number three in the MMA fighting global rankings, number three ranked bantamweight. So huge, huge, huge main event on Saturday. Great fight style-wise, a fight that Cory Sandhagen's wanted for a while. Jose, I'm just going to ask you, man, how excited are you for this particular matchup?
This is a 10 out of 10 main event. This is the every definition of a 10 out of 10 main event for a card on ESPN. The only thing I would say is like, I wish maybe this was an ABC card because then it could hit a broader audience. But like, this is a 10 out of 10 main event. And if this was like a Between the Links show or whatever, and we're going to like, oh, what's the best fight of the week? And of course the answer would be Cory Sandhagen versus TJ Dillashaw. Would that be the answer that the judges and everyone would look for? Probably not, which means it is the best fight of this entire week. Bare knuckle, UFC, any other local fights in the area, this is a 10 out of 10 main event against arguably the two best bantamweights in the world. And we've been talking about bantamweights being the best division and the most stacked division for so long, and that's true. Like the champion right now, Aljamain Sterling, a lot of people think he's not the best bantamweight in the world. A lot of people don't think Piotr Jan is the best bantamweight in the world, who was the guy that quote unquote Aljamain beat. Yes, there was the DQ loss, but for all we know, Cory Sandhagen and TJ Dillashaw are the two best 135ers in the world. They just don't have belts. So this is an 11 out of 10 main event. I am so excited for this card. I wouldn't care if this was the only fight on the card. This fight is every definition of a high level martial arts competition against two of the top 1%. Now, I say top 1%, I'm not talking about top 1% of bantamweights in the world. Top 1% of fighters in any weight class. TJ and Cory Sandhagen could very well be top 15 pound for pound. I'm very excited. 11 out of 10 in my mind.
You know, it's funny. You bring up, of course, the UFC champion, Aljamain Sterling, and some people who think the would-be champion, Piotr Jan, the former champion. TJ Dillashaw, when he was on the Food Truck Diaries earlier this week, or I should say maybe this past weekend, talking to a Brendan Schaub, says something to the effect of, I feel like Corey and myself have a stronger claim to the bantamweight title than Aljamain or, you know, whoever wins on Saturday, than Aljamain or Piotr Jan. So guys, like, you know, I mentioned our global rankings. We have our own rankings now. Jose, let me go back to you quick in case it come to you. Jose, what do you think your rankings ballot will look like if Cory Sandhagen, let's say Cory Sandhagen smokes TJ Dillashaw, or the other way around? Does one of them jump ahead of either man in your personal rankings, either Piotr Jan or Aljamain Sterling?
Cory Sandhagen won't, just because Aljamain Sterling submitted him in what, like a minute. So I think that's the only knock against him. But like, that was so long ago, and he's been like, especially if he smokes TJ, that would be three. Like, that would be Marlon, who many people consider to be still one of the best 135ers in the world. Frankie Edgar, future Hall of Famer, and one of, if not the knockouts of the entire year of 2021. Also like less than a minute. The only thing he has against him is Aljamain Sterling just kind of tore through him. But if TJ goes out there and smokes Cory Sandhagen, maybe two, maybe second overall, I still kind of, in my mind, I still put whoever has the belt number one. Like, I know the UFC puts the C next to them, but I know we don't do that, but in my mind, I still just default put them number one, and then TJ would be number two and Piotr Jan would be number three. But if we're just going talent-wise, if TJ goes out there and smokes Cory Sandhagen, I still think he's the most talented 135er in the UFC.
And could Sandhagen jump Jan in your rankings as well, and vice versa? If Sandhagen wins, does he jump Jan?
That's tough too, because he was what, like a round and a half away from beating Aljamain Sterling. Like, he was,
looked like it.
Kind of appeared he was on his way to a victory for the DQ. So he looked really good against the guy that submitted Cory Sandhagen in a minute. So I think, again, I think Corey would probably sit at number three if he wins. And I think TJ would probably be number two in my mind. But depends on how he wins, first of all.
Bachelor number two, same question to you. What happens to your rankings if TJ or Sandhagen has a really emphatic victory on Saturday? Do they jump? I'm not sure what your Jan Sterling 1-2 looks like, but do they jump into that top two, either guy?
No. Jan, my personal ballot, Jan still stays number one, no matter what. Aljamain will remain at number two because he does have the victory over Corey Sandhagen.
Yep.
If they actually rematch, a lot of ifs here. If Corey beats TJ, I do believe Corey is actually overall a better fighter than Aljamain Sterling. But Aljamain Sterling does have the win, and it's a semi-recent victory. I think the genius Ryan Hall said a couple weeks ago at his media scrum before his fight, the MMA is such a volatile game, and at the highest level, judging kind of one fight who's better is very tough in the sport. For example, the Phoenix Suns, they won the first two games and lost four straight. I see a lot of that with Corey Sandhagen and Aljamain Sterling. I think if they fought seven times, I believe Corey will be the overall better fighter. But Aljamain won that fight, and that's all we have to go on. So I would still have Aljamain ranked at number two. Now, the big question to me is, if TJ, right now we have TJ unranked, and that's really based on our criteria, because if you don't fight in 18 months, you're automatically unranked.
Mm-hmm.
If TJ loses, where do we rank him? Say he loses a close five round fight.
Yeah.
Where do you rank him? Because obviously you can't keep him unranked. But yeah, I don't know. Actually, we have to watch the fight, and I don't know. Just rankings is all subjective, you know. So it's just the rankings are gonna be fun after this fight, basically.
As they always are, fun and contentious. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, I think he has to be, like, if he loses a close competitive fight, I can't imagine him not making my top 10. I haven't really thought about
I would put him at four.
Okay, even if he loses, loses a good fight.
Yeah, a highly competitive fight.
I would argue that four. Too. I mean, yeah.
Like, just one above Rob Font. Like, Rob Font is incredible, but again, we just, like Casey just said it, like, if Corey Sandhagen could be the best bantamweight in the world, he just had an off night that night. So he's losing to number one at like best, and at worst, he's losing to three. So he's losing to someone in the top three. So I just stick him at four, especially if it's a highly competitive fight.
Yeah. I mean, just for the sake of context, I'll tell people what our, you can find our rankings, of course, on mayfighting.com. There's a nice little tab at the top, which links to all our rankings articles. Right now, what it looks like is we have tied at number one, Aljamain Sterling and Piotr Jan. Four first place votes for Aljamain, four first place votes for Piotr Jan. And then Corey Sandhagen at three, Rob Font at four, and then Jose Aldo, Pedro Munoz, Marlon Moraes. So as you said, Jose, I think we would all comfortably rank Dillashaw ahead of Aldo, Munoz, Moraes, and then Rob Font might be the one people disagree on. So yeah, he probably comes in top five easily, regardless, unless he looks for some reason absolutely atrocious on Saturday. But his body of work is so strong.
And what if Corey smokes TJ Dillashaw? Mm-hmm, where do we put him then? I mean, Corey smoked Yeager, but we still have Frank Yeager top 10. Yeah, so it's going to be a lot of debate.
To me, it's
a great division. Yeah, it's a great division.
If TJ loses the lowest in my, because I don't vote on our rankings, I'd stick him at five rather than three. Like, he'd be below Font or above Font. That's pretty much what he's fighting for in my book. I still think he's a top five bantamweight.
Jose, you mentioned just how amazing this fight is. It's again probably one of the best fights this year. Certainly one of the best on a free card. Reputations is such a big part of it. We already just talked about the sort of the ranking reputations, and of course, there's this whole storyline with TJ Dillashaw coming back and the UFC kind of wanting to, you know, seemingly wanting to help out with this this reputation rehabilitation that he's currently going under. He's made the rounds. He's done a lot of interviews. His whole theme is kind of like, I wanted to get ahead of everything. That's been his idea since the drug test was announced two Aprils ago. So do you think that he's done enough to move on? Do you think a win, for the most part, other than people who are always going to bring it up, do you think the broader, you know, MMA scene is kind of like, okay, whatever, he won. Clearly he can fight without whatever he was on before. And it becomes a backstory.
Maybe that's subjective too. In my mind, I think he's handled it well, as best as you can. Like, as you said, he's gone in front of it. He's been incredibly transparent. Like, he wanted an advantage. He admitted it. He's not pretending that he didn't take a banned substance to take an advantage. The only comparison I can think of is, do you remember Jason Giambi? I think he was the 2002 AL MVP for the Oakland A's. He tested positive for banned substances, and he came out and was like, yeah, I took it because I wanted to be better at baseball. Andy Pettit did the same thing, I think, with HGH when he was on the Yankees or the Astros. I can't remember which team he was on testing positive. And the MLB commissioner at the time, Bud Selig, actually was commendable with them and gave them like lesser sentences and everything because of the way they handled it. And then you see guys like Roger Clemens and Barry Bonds and everyone who are so adamant and like they push back so much and they argue even though all the evidence is there. And they're still kind of on the outskirts of baseball, while Jason Giambi and Andy Pettit had a lot, had continued to play even after. And it wasn't nearly brought up as much. Like, yes, it's still there. Yes, there's still questions. But the fact that they were so transparent with what they were doing, I think helped at least in the minds of some fans. But again, it's all subjective. I'm not going to try to argue with fight fans because that's silly. But in my mind, I think he's handling it as best he can. And being as transparent as possible, especially and who's been the most like outspoken critic in terms of like fighters has been Michael Bisping. Remember, he's like, he has nothing positive to say about anyone who has tested positive mm-hmm. for anything, even if it's like a tainted supplement like Yoel Romero. He still brings it up to Yoel Romero. Michael Bisping on his own podcast had nothing but positive things to say about TJ Dillashaw because of how he's handling. So if you can sway Michael Bisping in saying something positive after your after testing positive, you're clearly doing something right in how you're handling it.
Yeah, yeah. You mentioned baseball. I think Alex Rodriguez was another good case. I think he fought it at first, or I don't remember. But then
I wasn't trying to bring him up. But
I remember ESPN later they wrote this kind of gushing piece about how he was like putting his. And I thought about it immediately when I saw the TJ the UFC Fight Pass like documentary. I was like, this reminds me so much of like ESPN, like how they kind of again were like, oh, Alex Rodriguez is trying to turn his.
I think they wanted Alex Rodriguez to be part of the broadcast team.
Well, and he was later, right?
I think he did Baseball Tonight. He was very good, but I think they really wanted him, so they were trying to like clean his image up a bit. But that's
so real quick. Go ahead, Casey. On the TJ Dillashaw history. Now, we said TJ openly admitted he took EPO for the flyweight fight, correct? Against Cejudo.
Yeah.
And he says he took that because he wasn't going to make weight. Correct? Was it, or is it strictly like I'm just gonna punch harder, or was it very focused on I wasn't gonna make the weight? That's why I had to take it.
I don't think it was the weight. I think it was that he couldn't train, like he was so drained. Like I think making weight was fine.
It kind of goes hand in hand because he's so drained
like
from
either he was gonna make weight and he wasn't gonna be able to train, or he was gonna train and not make weight. So I think he was trying to do both he was trying to optimize his weight cut while not slowing down the training.
I like TJ Dillashaw so much as a fighter, purely just fighting. But man, I mean, I'm just kind of going back in time. And when that whole I'm going to go to 25. And I remember I was going, no, you've never even competed at 25, even when you were like younger. And I just thought it was the stupidest thing for the UFC to do. And clearly it was. And it, you know, cost them millions of dollars and in his legacy a lot. But I think I saw a little tweets about this. I wasn't really sure because I wasn't at the media day. Did they test TJ's old samples for EPO?
Yes.
And so that's what he says. Yeah.
Yes. That's we're taking that off of TJ's word.
It's only coming from TJ.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. He said they tested as far back as the Sun Tzu rematch. His second fight was a Sun Tzu. That's according to him. I sent a message to USADA. They have mentioned in the past they do not publicly comment on how far. Like if they are, they say they do it. They certainly do test old samples, but they won't usually respond to media inquiries about exactly how far back. We are taking Dillashaw's word.
So we're taking the word from a cheater.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's kind of the way to look at it. And
it's not coming from USADA. It is coming from TJ. Sure. I just want to leave that out. Okay.
Yes. Yes. Look, the most cynical way to look at it is you get suspended,
I think Jeff Nowitzki also commented on it too, and yes, they said, I don't think he was as exact, but he said they went back and tested it.
They go back too. Yeah, they said they can do it. They have the capacity to do it, and they will do it. So it's a certainly believable thing for TJ to say. But He's off for 2 years, steps right back into a high-profile main event, possibly a number one contender's bout. So, look, we're not here to tell you guys what to think. But, I mean, there's, like I said, the dynamics around his comeback are certainly more than just, as I'm sure they'll say on the... I just can't wait to see how they dance around it on the broadcast. You know, it's kind of like, ah, yes, the returning champion, returning to the division,
Looking at the USADA site, I just punched it in. TJ's been tested 11 times.
Okay. After his suspension.
Just 2021. Like this year. Like the last 7 months.
Okay, so he didn't get popped while he was under suspension, basically.
Correct. Not
as far. Okay, so good. Cool.
guys, let's get to the pick. As I said, there's so much talk about this fight, and it's, I think, just be so fascinating to watch. But let's break it down. Who is going to win the dang fight? Pardon my language. Casey, who's going to win? How do they do it?
Corey Sandhagen. Younger, better, fresher. He's been in the ring more, and been in the cage more. And TJ Dillashaw is 35. He looks like he kind of looks like an age 35. He's not a young 35. He doesn't, from just looking at some of his photos. But I think Sandhagen is the second best bantamweight in the world behind Peter Yan. And it's going to show this Saturday night. And I think it's going to be a dominant decision victory.
Jose, go ahead. What do you think?
I'm going to pick Sandhagen too. Don't know how it's going to happen, but I base a lot of my picks off of strength of schedule. And I think TJ's two wins over Cody Garbrandt have not aged as well. And they both have the wins over Lineker and Asuncao, if I remember correctly. The win over Lineker for TJ, to me, is still one of the absolute, like, we talk about perfect games. That was a perfect game all around. I just think beating Frankie Marlon are a little more impressive, especially in the last 12 months. Because when did he fight Aljamain? Last June, July? So at least 13, 12 months ago, we fought Aljamain Sterling. Like Casey said, activity, younger, faster, taller. I just think I'm picking Corey, but it's like 51-49, Corey Sandhagen for me.
I'm always the last to get off of a train or a bandwagon, whatever you want to call it, in MMA. So I'm sticking with Dillashaw. I think I'm not saying he has the best resume at 135 pounds, but in my eyes, he's still the best. I think he's the best 135er I've ever seen. So I'm going that direction. 2 years is a very long time in MMA. You're 2 years away from the game. Again, with the new names that have come up, like I could be totally just crazy here, and Sandhagen is light years ahead of him, you know, in the 2 years that he's been gone. But I think I have to see it. I think I have to see it before I'm willing to go, you know, to just say like Sandhagen's definitely, you know, the best guy alongside Piotr Jan and Aljamain Sterling. So yeah, I don't know. I'm going Dillashaw, and I'll say Dillashaw by decision. What did you guys think for Sandhagen? You think he's going to finish?
I don't know.
I think it'll be a 46. I think it'll be relatively dominant but competitive victory for Sandhagen.
TJ historically does very well in later rounds. If it's a dominant decision, it will be very interesting to see. I think he's the only fighter in UFC history to have two fifth round stoppage wins.
I believe that. Yeah,
so,
I believe that.
He had and then even Barao, he finished in the fourth round too. So I think he finished Barao in the fifth round, the fourth round, and then I think he finished Joe Soto in the fifth round. So like three straight fights that ended in the quote unquote championship rounds. Yeah. And Sandhagen's never fought in the championship round. So if it is a dominant five round decision, we've not had that opportunity to see Corey do that. So it'll be interesting.
And those victories for TJ, those late round finishes, he was dominant in those whole fights. It wasn't like he lost the first two rounds. And so
Joe Soto fight was also on like 24 hours notice.
But this fight rules. This fight rules. A fantastic fight night main event.
I don't want to see any fans arguing that there's a better fight this week. There's not.
Blueface and
I knew one of you two were going to bring up bad bare knuckle. Nothing on bare knuckle. Nothing. Like I'm fine. Like the bare knuckle boxing is great. I think it's awesome. It's fun to watch, but if you're looking at the main card of the UFC, every single fight on the main card is better than every single fight in the Bare Knuckle 19 card.
Well, listen, like I said, we're,
in terms of high level martial arts,
hold on. Yeah, tell him, Casey. Listen. Like I said earlier, guys, we're not here to do PR for anyone. BKFC 19 tonight, 8 o'clock. You can order on our, go to any article on our website. You can order through that link. We're not here to do PR for anyone. Let's talk about, like you said,
One last thing on this.
Go ahead.
Depending on how this fight plays out, it will be a interesting night. Because someone asked me this yesterday, if this was better than next week's main event, the Bellator main event, and it is. I don't know. It's great. Both of them are 10 out of 10. Both of them are 11 out of 10. I think the only thing Bellator has over this is for a title, and it's the end of a tournament.
Yeah.
And it's going to be in front of a crowd. I think it really sucks that this fight isn't in front of a crowd. But safety first. But
sure. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Sure. Yes.
The PFL is live from Chicago, April 19th, with welterweights and featherweights taking center stage. In the main event, former Bellator welterweight champion Andrei Kereshkov takes on knockout artist Magomed Umalatov. And 2022 PFL world champion Brendan Loughnane looks to start his 2024 off with a bang versus submission specialist Pedro Carvalho. Don't miss the action. Friday, April 19th, live at 10 p.m. Eastern Time on ESPN and ESPN+.
Vacations can be tricky. You already know how to book flights and hotels, but now the only thing you're missing is, you know, the actual travel experience. Because is it really a vacation if you're just sitting around like you would at home? You need a tool to get the most out of your time away. That's where Viator steps in. You can book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected. And 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
All right, guys, let's talk about some other fights in this card. Normally we would immediately jump to the co-main event here, but we kind of just got a co-main event by default, a very good fight. The originally scheduled bantamweight co-main event between Aspen Ladd and Macy Chiasson was unfortunately canceled due to, as the UFC reported vaguely, an injury. We had sources that could confirm, that it was Chiasson that withdrew. So we don't know the nature of the withdrawal exactly, but an injury. Chiasson withdrew. So I'm sure we'll hear more about that in the future. But either way, that fight is not happening. We don't know if it'll be rebooked. Bumped up into the co-headlining position is another bantamweight fight between Kyler Phillips and Holyan Paiva. So I think a very good fight, but again, it's always kind of a weird situation when it's, I don't even know if you would actually call it a co-main event. It's kind of just now the penultimate fight of the night.
You don't have to change the channel between the prelims and the main card. So everything's just on ESPN. It's just one long card.
Pretty much. Yeah. With only one. So I'll ask you first off, if you have any thoughts on the Phillips Paiva main event, otherwise, what other card fight on the main card? Casey, I'll go to you first. What other fight on the main card are you most interested in? And do you feel like could have been the co-main?
My personal people's main event is Barber versus Maverick. I think I love that. I'm super bummed. Ladd and how do you say her last name? Chiasson.
Yeah.
I'm bummed that didn't happen. Ladd is coming from that big her ACL surgery, so I was really excited for her to come back. And then now I'm seeing all this little drama online. Apparently, Aspen Ladd's family are kind of accusing Macy of faking an injury. That's trash. So that's kind of a bummer, but I hope that's I got a little cut. We can fight in a couple of weeks. I hope that's the story, because I really want to see Aspen Ladd fight. I think she is truly a top contender at bantamweight, who's only getting better, and who knows how good Macy is too. But for me, Macy, I'm sorry, There's two Macy's on this card.
There are two. This is a double Macy card.
Yeah. Okay. I was like, I thought I made that up. Jay's on. Yeah. I was like,
it was to be. I'm sorry. I should say. I'm sorry. I was too soon. Sorry, guys. It was to be a double Macy card.
Yeah. But the Barbara Maverick fight is a fight I'm really looking forward to because we'll see where Barbara is. The UFC really pushed her. She pushed herself. She went out there and said all the things that the most confident fighter would say, almost ridiculous things, saying, I'm next John Jones. I'm going to beat John Jones's youngest fighter to win a UFC title. Didn't happen. She's on a 2-fight losing streak. And now she's arguably facing a better fighter than her last two opponents that beat her already with Miranda Maverick, who's only getting better. And they're about the same age. They have the same experience levels. And this fight rules.
And Maverick is one of those people, not just an amazing prospect at 125, but like her story, it just gets more interesting every time you read about her. She's like one of those world's most interesting women type, yes, or woman type woman. Mm-hmm. She's also getting her, I think she's still pursuing her PhD as she is serving as a fighter, which is just amazing. And she's only 24 years old.
Yeah, she's just a few months older than Barbara, actually.
Yeah, this is insane. This is the rare car where she's not the youngest.
And the only difference really between Barbara and Maverick is that they both have two losses, but Maverick was fortunate enough to have her losses outside of the UFC. So it wasn't there wasn't like a lot of eyes on her. So she could lose it and, you know, kind of go, okay, just, you know, brush yourself off and get better. But Barbara, when she lost those fights, you know, it came with a lot of ridicule afterward and stuff. And a lot of, it was unfair, you know, but she did talk a big game. And if you talk a big game, you gotta have to, you know, eat crow sometimes.
Sure. And I think she's done a decent job of that. Again, she's young. She's definitely had some missteps, some public missteps, you know, as far as promotional wise. Yeah, promoting herself. And that's fine. Again, she came in at 21, 22 years old. Mm-hmm. So who among us, Casey, who among us? I would love to see some old footage of a 21, 22 year old, young Casey Lydon, full of piss and vinegar, getting it done. Jose, so what is the other fight on the main card that you are looking forward to the most?
The co-main event with the Kyler Phillips Pavea fight. I think that's going to be a showcase fight for Kyler Phillips. From everything I've heard, because he's an Arizona resident, he trains here. From everything I've heard, him and Casey Kenney and Sean O'Malley and like that group of bantamweights coming up, they all kind of came up together. I had always heard a lot about Casey Kenney. I didn't hear a lot about Kyler Phillips on the like I always saw him fight, but he was never one that was at like the tip of everyone's tongue. And then Sugar Sean O'Malley, I then just kind of burst onto the scene with that Dana White Contender Series performance. But from everything I've heard from people that have rolled with all these guys is that Kyler is probably the best grappler on the ground. Like Casey Kenney is the strongest, Sean O'Malley is the longest and lankiest. But if this was a straight jiu-jitsu tournament, I think a lot of people would pick Kyler Phillips to win. So Also, and I've never heard this from him or anyone else in the camp. It's always just been people that have watched that Kyler Phillips can pretty much do whatever he wants against Sean O'Malley. I'm not saying he can do that now in 2020, but this is just what I've heard from this scene. So I think that'll be a showcase fight. And then there are two really good middleweight fights on the prelims. Like Puna Soriano is an undefeated prospect. Yeah. What, back-to-back knockouts in his first two wins. Brendan Allen is an incredibly high-level grappler. At 185. I know Sean Strickland jokes that he took the coward's way out, won by ankle lock at UFC 261, but that's absurd. What? And before his loss to Sean Strickland, what was he, like 4-5 wins in a row? And like they were, a bunch of them were stoppage wins in the UFC. He is a future, I don't want to say he's a future champion, but he is very clearly, both of these individuals, I think, future top 15, top 10 middleweights in the world. And I very much want to see Brian Allen rematch Sean Strickland at some point in the future, because they just keep talking all that greasiness. And then Ian Heinisch, whose last loss was what, to Kelvin Gastelum, and before that they were to Amari Akhmadov and Derek Brunson, who are both top 10 middleweights at some point, if not still in the I know Amari Akhmadov just got cut, but when they fought, they were clearly top 15, top 10 middleweights in the world. So two exceptional middleweight fights to end the quote-unquote prelim cards, as I like to call it, just the halfway mark, because you don't have to change the channel. The only difference is Bruce Buffer makes an introduction for the quote-unquote main card. So two incredibly high-level middleweight fights. And then I'm sure you guys are going to want to talk about the Randy Costa-Adrian Yanez fight, so I didn't want to take that. But There's a ton of good. This fight card is a really quote unquote diehard MMA fans' dream. Awesome card.
This card is everything next week's fight night card is not.
Oh goodness. I hope I'm glad Michael will be back, I think, to host a preview show for that one, because that's gonna be a bit of a grind to get through. With respect, of course, to all the fighters competing on next Saturday's card.
There's another card that night too, so we're good.
Yeah. So Brendan Allen, Jose, I just wanted to add, technically is at actually still four straight wins in middleweight. His fight with Sean Strickland was a scheduled,
right?
One, not one where a guy missed weight, right?
Catch
weight bout. So if you want to say, so he is tied with Derek Brunson and I think Uriah Hall for the second longest streak, middleweight streak behind Adesanya at 10. So hat tip, by the way, of course, to Michael Carroll for the great statistician. I saw him write that up.
One last thing. On this card too, which I think has a lot of significance, mostly for her, but Sajara Eubanks is fighting. Mm-hmm. She is currently 6-6. If she loses the fight to a UFC debutante, she will be under 500. And this is for a woman that was scheduled to be in the main event in a flyweight fight in Madison Square Garden at one point. And she could go under 500. She'll be on a three fight losing streak. No, she's 36 years old. If she loses, she loses this fight, depending how the UFC sees her, you know, it could be, you know, her last fight in the UFC. So it's a lot of, and she had a lot of potential. I mean, like, even her, like her losses, like she doesn't get blown out, but she just kind of loses, and she can't make, and she seems like to be a flyweight, but can't make that weight. So she's a small bantamweight. And here we are.
She's at that point where she's only lost to like the top seven at bantamweight or flyweight. So it's like, I don't want to say it's hard to justify it, but like if you're under 500 and you can't crack that top five, like it might be rough. Wasn't there a lot of drama on her social media a couple months ago? I don't know what happened with that. I don't know. I just remember
her partner, It got ugly. There were a lot of, I think maybe some custody type stuff.
Yes.
For their child. So
claims of domestic violence, no charges were filed, but yes, claims of domestic violence. So that should be noted. Absolutely. So the thing about Sarge though, just to get back to her fight on Saturday is I didn't know. I totally forgot. She's dropping back down to 125, which had been a big problem for her in the past, but she hit 125 on the dot. She proudly just tweeted championship weight. So, you know, well done there. She's number 12. Going into this, she was number 12 in our rankings at 135. And now she's returning to flyweight, where she almost, let's not forget, also almost fought for the inaugural UFC flyweight title, except she unfortunately missed weight for that opportunity. And that is how we ended up with Nico Montano going on to win the...
I don't know if she missed weight. She pulled out, right? She didn't even take the scale.
It was weight related.
One of those things.
Pretty clearly, she wasn't going to make it. She had problems making weight in the show. I mean, there was a whole episode of the show dedicated to her really, really struggling to make weight. So that was an issue. But now she made 125. As you said, she's a bit up there in age. But yeah, has always been a tough out. Was top 15 ranked at 135 for us. Does hold a win over Lauren Murphy. Number one. This is a long time ago.
She has two wins over, like, she has a win over Lauren Murphy and Roxanne Modafferi and Julia Avila.
Julia Avila, who we're always hyping up. And we're always hyping up Julia Avila. Yeah. And she lost to Sajara Eubanks. So yeah, big make or break fight. A lot of hype around Elise Reed, but she is a strawweight. She's stepping in on less than a month's notice. She's fought as low as atom weight as well. So there will be a big size disadvantage going to this one. She certainly has a chance, but it does, you know, the odds are, you know, you would think that this would be Sajara Eubanks' fight to lose. But a lot of hype around Elise Reed, just maybe when she drops back down to 115. So yeah, that's definitely one to watch. Damn, guys, I think we've kind of gone up and down the card. So we can probably take some questions. Casey, I had to read one comment from before. It's coming from one of the funniest names I've seen. The comment is all caps. Don't hate on Kyler Phillips. It's a co-main now. Too bad, suckas. I think the suckas is us. Kyler Phillips is sharp. Five P's sharp on the feet. Watch him piece up everyone. And this comment came from someone named, Casey, you're going to love this, Mixed Partial Farts. Mixed Partial Farts.
You, sir, a good fighter.
You, sir, Mr.
I hope you're still watching. Let's go to the Let's go to the questions, please. Let's get to it. Let me make three questions.
This is in reference to what we were talking about earlier about people basically owning up to PEDs.
Yes, I wanted to. Yes, I saw this from Takero Man 91 earlier. Ortega is not really ever praised for admitting being on steroids after he got caught. I'll start this off by saying he might not be praised for it. It also never gets brought up. So that is the kind of reward for however. I actually don't remember how he handled it exactly.
It's because it was his first. Yeah. It was his first ever UFC fight, and it was so that was 7-8 years ago, and he won.
He won the fight.
Yeah, by in like a minute or 90 seconds over. Yeah. I can't even remember. Like Mike De La Torre, maybe.
Yeah,
I can't quite, yeah. But it was like that long
ago. The computer. Look at this guy.
I've had this conversation with people before, like, oh, how come no one talks about it? I'm like, well, he admitted it, and it was so long ago, and he's almost had 10 years of negative tests.
Yeah,
and it's looked better than ever.
That's it. Yeah, that's what it takes sometimes.
And unfortunately, when TJ got popped, he didn't get popped in his fighting, you know, whoever on some prelim. Right. You know, he got popped in a championship fight for a main event. So
I'm looking it up.
It's going to stick out a lot more.
A main event fight that he lost in like 30 seconds. So like it was the perfect storm of people wanting to just pile on him. And again, I'm not saying it's not warranted, by the way. I'm not judging people who still want to criticize TJ Dillashaw. I absolutely understand. Again, that's part of the intrigue, as you mentioned, way at the top of the show heading into this. There's just so many ways to look at it.
I saw a tweet from a colleague of ours, RJ Clifford, and he kind of compared the punishments you get in different leagues versus what TJ got in MMA, and basically saying, you know, it was just, I mean, he understands this is a fight sport, so it's different, but at what point are we just kicking a man while he's down? You know, you know what I mean? Like, at what point is, okay, you did your time. If you pass your next drug test, like all 11 drug tests throughout 2021 and your drug test for this fight coming Saturday, is it old news at that point? Is it, I mean, I know fighters are going to be kind of jerks and fans are going to be jerks, but from the media standpoint, is that just old news now?
Well, for me, if you cheat, for me, you are essentially a cheater for life. I mean, there are
circumstances. Aren't degrees of cheating?
There are degrees, absolutely.
Jaywalking is breaking the law, and murder is breaking the law.
And there are cases, and I absolutely believe some cases, tainted supplement cases. I know it's kind of, a lot of fans are skeptical. I'm saying don't believe every case, but if you know what goes on in the supplement business, there are definitely supplements that have stuff in them that the fighters don't know about. For some of the fighters, it's a workaround, whatever. But I don't have like a super hard fast rule. But generally in this situation, especially when someone comes forward and says, "Yes, I cheated," I'm always going to view their career through that lens. It happens with Anderson Silva too, and I understand him. I mean, I think he had a broken leg. I think he wanted to recover as quickly as possible. He took banned substances that he wasn't allowed to take, and that's it. He broke the rules. You can say it's justified or not. You can say whether he's a cheater throughout his career or not. But these things just become part of someone's history. So that, and again, that's just me. I'm not saying objectively that's how everyone should live their life. But in this case, where someone admits they did it and they admit it, I'm always just kind of look at everything they do with a little, I don't know, you know, a little bit of a wondering if they're still trying to beat the system. You know,
I just looked up Brian Ortega's statement, and it's like. Anyone that tests positive for it and gets don't take them, but if you get caught, it's like he just lays it out. He goes, "Yeah, my coaches didn't know it. I apologize, and I'd rather lose a fair fight to an opponent than take banned substances moving forward."
No, there you go.
Good on you.
And again, like I said, it happened very, very low profile. First UFC fight, no one even knew who Brian Ortega was. There you go. That's so he got away.
The profile for the picture of the article is literally him with shaved, like the last time he had shaved head. Like again, from that point on, he just grew it out.
There you go. It's a totally different man. It's in the past now. But yeah, never gets brought up. Could this happen for TJ someday? Again, doubtful. It happened while he was champion. He had to relinquish a title. He was coming off of a flyweight title fight. But based on some of the sentiment I'm seeing, you kind of mentioned RJ Clifford's suggestion, Casey, is like, is there a point where, you know, where we forgive and move on? I don't know. Yeah. That's for every individual person to say. What do we got, Casey?
Okay.
It's only a kick. a jump, a block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle, a run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Oh, this look, I do think this needs to be answered. Connor Thompson wants to know, Jose, this man has thousands of anime behind him. Do we really trust his opinion? Jose, the floor is yours.
I don't have any anime behind me.
Boom. Take that.
Oh, none. Tell him the difference. None. Tell him the difference, Jose. This man anime doesn't know.
Anime is an animated show or movie.
Yes.
If you
come
want.
On, Connor. Come on,
I just
Connor
don't Thompson. I don't have any anime behind me.
Yeah.
Come I have on, a handful Connor of Thompson. I have a bunch of manga to the right of me, but behind me there's no Japanese anything. It's all over here to the right, not behind me.
You suck, Connor. You suck. Yeah, dude.
We live in facts, my guy.
Connor Thompson. I am sorry.
Usagi Yojimbo is based in Japan, but is an English is like written for the English speakers.
What a schooling! What a schooling! Oof. Media on fan violence. Ah, yes, our old friend Scott McCrate. So great that Cruz is caught in this fight. Cruz gets the loser of this fight. Yeah, I especially if it's Dillashaw. That's a rematch I've wanted to see forever. Guys, what do you think?
Yeah. If TJ loses, that's definitely a possibility. If Sanhagen loses, not much.
Do you remember, like, Casey, for like 2 years you've been calling for TJ Uriah Faber? Is that still your fight?
Oh, I wanted this fight to be TJ versus Uriah, but sure.
So if he loses, why not make it?
Well, that's if TJ's in that position. If he loses, there's still so many options for him because he's such a name and a kind of a villain in the sport. So it's an easy sell. People want to see him lose now or see him win or whatever. So if TJ looks horrible, then. Yeah, every single bantamweight will be coming out of retirement to try to fight TJ. So, if TJ loses and looks bad too, not just there's good losses and bad losses, you know. So we'll see. Uriah's still in the gym. Uriah's still in the gym. So I would still like to see that fight. Wait, that never fight that never happened. Yeah.
It's Cruz. I see a commenter, MMA dog. I see an MMA dog in the comments saying he says DC and Felder are calling the fight. Is Cruz just on the desk? Is he doing the desk or is he going to call?
No,
the
main I think he's calling what I've read. I remember reading it like Dominic Cruz to call TJ's return or something like that.
I like that. I mean, I hope it's Dom. I hope it's Dom.
I hope it's Dom in general.
Yeah.
I don't always love I believe he is supposed to be calling the fight. I don't always love how biased Dominic Cruz can be, but this is one situation where I want him to be as biased as possible. I want to know everything that he's thinking while he's watching this fight. Give me that MMA doctor. Sorry, Cruz.
Uriah Faber has been tested 3 times in USADA in 2021, so he's still in the USADA pool too.
Yeah, he said he's just waiting for the right fight. Joseph, another old friend of ours, Joseph Boza. Did this card suffer from a lack of big names outside of TJ's return after 30 months? No, exactly. This card suffers from nothing. No, this card suffers. No. What is
this is a fight night card. This card is for outside the main event, maybe co-main. Don't expect big names on these cards, but expect good fighters who are on their way to becoming big names. And that's what fight night cards are. So,
in 2008 and 19, if I told you that Corey Sandhagen and TJ Dillashaw are fighting in the main event, you would probably assume that there's a high chance that it's a pay-per-view for a title. Yeah. This fight card, this main event is incredible, and the rest of the card is exactly what it should be.
Yeah.
Fantastic. You're going to tune in for the main event, and you're going to catch a lot of up-and-coming people that you should remember.
Which is how fight night should be laid out, yeah.
Like Casey said, these could be future big names. Kyler Phillips, Miranda Maverick.
If the main event was just on a pay-per-view card, but not the main event, I would demand this would be one of those 5-round non-title fights that they're doing now.
Yes.
Oh yeah, this fight was 3 rounds. Yeah, we would be looking at this going like, oh no.
Stupid.
All right. Just Bozzi, your question got the guys all worked up. Jeez Louise. Right.
Big names is also big names is a subjective term. Like to me, Kyle Phillips is a big name in the Arizona scene, but like So like, it's like Randy Koss is a big name in the Northeast scene. So it's, yeah. it just depends
it's
on
not like,
we're all geographical.
It's not like a Ryan Hall. That's a big name to everybody. You know what I mean? It's there's different kinds of big names. What is next for?
I like we've mentioned Ryan Hall twice on this episode. It's good. It's good.
I just wish he'd fought recently. What was the what's the next question? Okay, let's get a couple more in here.
Yeah, we got some more.
Antoine Willis. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. Would you guys say the main event is basically an interim title fight? Jose already shaking his head. There's so many prospect matchups that could make this. And there's so many prospect matchups that this that could make this a pay-per-view card, I believe Antoine is saying. So,
actually, imagine if they did throw an interim title fight on this.
No.
Imagine, like, a couple weeks ago. Why not, though? I mean, it should be Jan.
Because I think
it would need to be Jan.
Jan has to be involved. If it's an interim title fight, Jan has to be involved. We said this on the A-side. I would have no problem, especially if Aljamain, because you can't mess around with neck injuries like Aljamain said. I know he said he wants to fight on the MSG card, but if he's not cleared, I have no problem if the main event winner fights Jan for an interim title, just so Aljamain can heal up. I have no problem with that.
Exactly what Jose said. Exactly what Jose said.
Okay. I don't understand. I'm sorry, I shouldn't even. Someone in the comments, Sneakers219 says, Kyler Phillips' mom doesn't even know his name. So I guess we're trying to run down. I don't understand people taking... Like,
you know why he said that? Do you know why he said that? Because he wanted you to read it out loud. That is why that individual said it.
It worked. Congratulations. I don't understand fans who take pride, or maybe that's the wrong word for it, but are so open about, like, I don't know who these people are. I'm like, buddy, I'm just going to say it. That says more about you as an MMA fan than it does about the fighters. I'm sorry. And maybe it also says something about the UFC's promotion abilities, but these are future, again, like I said, these are future names that you want to keep an eye on. Don't be that guy who, like,
you also, I don't think everyone, I know a lot of people in general just like to, if they don't know something, they immediately blame the UFC for everything. If you don't know him, you just haven't watched him fight. Now you can learn who he is. Like, that's just how it is. Don't use the UFC not promoting someone as an excuse not to know a top 15 fighter.
Yeah. If you watched Kyler Phillips' first two UFC fights and you're like, oh, I don't know who Kyler Phillips is, then you're just an idiot. I'm sorry. I mean, maybe you don't quite remember. I should be fair. Maybe you don't quite remember the name. But this is a guy, if you had seen him fight before, you're like, holy crap, this guy is
And you are correct. We watch a lot of fights. And honestly, I can name a few fighters on this card, whatever. But I've never seen who's fighting. I go, I never heard of him. Then I realized, wait, I've seen three of his fights.
Right.
I remember Kyler Phillips. I remember his look. I remember the way he talks. He's got that it back.
He
moves the needle. He just has to
now
win.
He fought on the contender series and should have gotten a contract. He wanted 40 seconds, if I remember correctly, and he didn't get a contract.
What season? Was it like the early seasons when
no.
he actually. It was later
no.
seasons when all you
season
had to do
four.
Was...
Wow. Season four. Yeah. He was undefeated it was like elbows and like punches and elbows and he won. And then now, to be fair, he did lose a split decision in his first regional fight after that, but then got a head kick knockout in the card I watched in Phoenix, the LFA card, and then got immediately thrown to the UFC and hasn't lost since.
I bet he got a better contract. By not signing the contender series, but
that LFA card I went to had, I think, a UFC fighter in every fight on the main card. I like current.
Sorry, just a few more comments here. Dalton S saying this is such a perspective of people who are not watching these fights on European time till 6 a.m. Dalton S, I feel for you,
that's
but
true.
This is
that's
one.
A good point.
That's a fair point. But I would say for next week, if you hear us like talking up next week's card, then you're definitely like, okay, well, this is because you guys have the luxury of watching it at a reasonable time. That is absolutely correct, Dalton, as I sympathize. But this is one worth staying up for / getting up early for. I don't know how you guys do it over there. David Sandine also says, Kyler Phillips is mixed partial farts, which I think is a compliment now. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
And Azan Zaman on that saying, this is a showcase fight for Kyler Phillips. It probably is. He was originally supposed to fight Rafael Assunção, which would have been a much more competitive fight.
Up in competition.
I want to add one thing because I looked up because I wanted to see who got the contracts during that fight card that he didn't. Julian Marquez, who is very popular, Brandon Davis won. And then Kyler Phillips, I think, was only 3-0 or 2-0 or something like that. And so he didn't get a contract, but he got put into the Ultimate Fighter. So he's still technically on a path.
Yeah. He was, and he lost to what's his name? The Canadian guy, one of my Canadian boys. What's his name? Help me. The Clark Kent.
Katona.
Yeah, he lost to
Brown. Yeah, who won the series? Who won the series?
The UFC cut Katona.
The first Canadian to win a non like all Canadian / all your Australian people.
I was a Katona fan. He was such a proud nerd.
He's great.
And the UFC got rid of him after one loss or whatever.
It was not one loss.
Well, he was still good. He was UFC level.
He lost,
but we're not good.
He lost two fights in a row, and I don't think won a single second of either fight. And yeah, but again, like it was to Merab and Hunter Azure, who are very good fighters. Yeah.
He'll be back.
But going back to, is the UFC promoting Kyler Phillips? They moved him to the co-main event on a very good fight night card. They could have moved a lot of fights to that co-main event. They chose Kyler Phillips. So though initially they weren't, the promotional machine wasn't maybe behind them, there's a little bit of, the UFC definitely sees something in Kyler Phillips. That's why he's this high on the card.
Someone tweeted, and I just want to bring, I apologize if I can't remember who saw it, but like if you see Kyler Phillips fight, he has like the cornrows and the beard. And someone goes, the only reason Kyler Phillips is in the co-main event is in case a casual fan goes, oh, Jorge Masvidal is fighting. And then they just keep watching. They mistake Kyler Phillips for Jorge Masvidal. So
virtually
which is obviously not true, but it is absolutely hilarious.
Casey, I think what you're saying really more speaks to just the one thing we'll never question about the UFC. I know we criticize the UFC and Dana White all the time, is their level of talent acquisition is crazy. I mean, they can, like you said, they've just kind of now fallen bass backwards into a high quality bantamweight main event, but that wasn't the original plan. They had another good, I'm not blaming them. They had another good main event set.
Another good bantamweight fight.
Yeah. So I'm not blaming them for that, but there's just so much talent in the UFC. Again, we can criticize all we want. You're going to get like three out of four quality cards every month, if not four, plus everything else that's going, like we said, Bellator next week. But we'll talk about that, more about that next week. Let's go with this last question. MMA Dog, who's been with us from the beginning of this show, has been watching this whole time and providing lots of great comments. Thank you, MMA Dog. And what a cute dog in the picture. What is the talk of Barber being cut if she loses? I don't know if I heard that. She's young and exciting. People like to love her or hate her. Why would the UFC gift her to Bellator where Barber would be a top five? Well, let me first say, I don't know if she would. Bellator's flyweight division is good. So
everything kind of made sense to the very last line, but
So I'll start from the back. I'll just say, because I don't know if you guys need to address this, but Bellator's flyweight division is really good. I do not think she's automatically a top five flyweight. She might not be in the top 10. It's a very strong division.
Yeah,
I don't know. Is there, Jose? Again, usually you know me. I don't actually watch MMA. Actually watch interviews. Has there been? Mm-hmm. I definitely don't listen to people talk about MMA, which is like, why would anybody do that? Have you heard this, that she might get cut? This would be three straight. It would be three straight. Yeah, she's on her first losing streak. Three straight if she loses.
I just think people are going off of history. Like, you lose three in a row, it's not good for your career. But like, I think she would be top 10 right away. In Bellator, I think, especially at flyweight, like I think she's the better fighter than Valley Lareda, who is in the top 10.
Hannah
Guy, like both of those, and nothing against those women. I think they're incredibly high level martial arts. I just think Nancy Barber's, they're just very young. Diana asked, I can't pronounce her last name. She's just 4-0, and then after that, like Alejandra Lara and Vita are like 9-4, 6-4. So like Macy could be top five just by default. Like, would she be Aleem Allais, Liz Carmouche, or Juliana?
No.
But like by default, she might be top five, and she hits really hard for flyaway. But she's not going to get cut she lost to Roxanne Modafari, who has I was trying to figure this out. Does Roxanne Modafari have the most fights in the history of women's MMA? She's way up there, if not.
This came up recently. And she made a comment like that. She said, if you count her, something like her Ultimate Fighter fights, and if you count
I'm counting all. Like, how many fights do you think she has where it wasn't like considered professional because women's MMA was treated so differently? Like, she has fought in every like promotion and ever, and like she's fought everybody. So, she blew her knee out, but I still would have favored Roxanne that fight in general. And then, Alexa Grasso is an incredibly high level fighter too. Like, she was. Like, she just can't make 115, but she was on the fast track to fight for the strawweight title before like weight issues kind of derailed that. And then that fight was awesome against Alexa Grasso. Like, Macy Barber, like, stunned Grasso a lot. She just got boxed up by a better striker. So if you lose to Miranda Maverick, who Casey and Alex and everyone kind of agrees is a future contender, that's three, like, you're losing. Like, is Dominic, should Dominic Reyes get cut? No. He's lost to, like, the champ, the former champ, and who many people consider to be the next number one contender.
I know there are two different people, but like I compare Barber to Jeremy Stephens in a bit because people are like, oh, Jeremy Stephens needs to be cut. It's like, I was like, well, yeah, if you just go strictly losses, yes. You know, if Barber loses three in a row, especially bad, yeah, she could be cut. You can be cut off one loss in the UFC, but level of competition is all that freaking matters in this sport. And just like Jose said, she's until Barber loses to, I don't know whoever you think is the worst UFC flyweight. If she gets smoked by whoever you think that person is, then maybe we can talk. But Miranda Maverick clearly is not the worst flyweight. She's probably the best. She just needs a fight to prove it, and that's what I think we're going to see Saturday. But she ain't going to get cut if she loses. But when I talk about Jeremy Stephens, even though he's lost like six in a row or something like that, he's losing to just top tier fighters until he loses to schlubs at the very bottom end of the rankings, then we can talk.
So let me go back to the point about Modifier having the most fights. So our pal Drake Riggs tweeted a few weeks ago. He said, with the booking of Roxanne Modifier and Tatiana Suarez September 25th, UFC 266, Roxanne ties the current record for most MMA fights for a woman in MMA history. Wow. She'll join the likes of Satoki Shinashi and Masako Yoshida at age 44. And then Modifier responded.
So clearly she responded
saying, thank you for realizing that. And if you count Ultimate Fighter fights, I've already won. Yeah. I already have.
And regardless, like, she has the most for a Westerner, like, easy. Like, by how many fights did she have before Macy Barber even had a pro fight?
I was going to say was born.
A ton.
Maybe when she was born. Because again, she's 44. So it's very possible she was definitely doing martial arts.
Roxanne Modafari has more wins than Macy Barber has years on this earth.
Yes, this is correct.
She has 25 wins and Macy Barber is 23.
And I'm glad what you guys were saying about records in regards to Roxanne Modafari and Jeremy Stephens, because just before we close out here, I'm going to plug, I have an interview with the GOAT, Artem Lobov, which is probably going to go up in about an hour after this, and by the time we have a post for this ready on the site, where he talks about the very, he's talked about this before, very passionate about how his record, which is below 500 in MMA, he's like, does not reflect how good a fighter I am. He's like, from day one, all I want to do is fight the best guys. I never ducked anybody. So he's like, I hope. He says, I hope fans are educated about this and look past records, padded records, guys like 18-1, 20-1, haven't fought nobody. So anyway, look for that interview on MMAfight.com.
I miss Artem Lobov. I want him back in MMA World.
He's back Saturday. Yeah.
And the Bell of Hay, right? He's fighting that league, right?
No. He'll be surrounded by sandbags. Okay?
Oh, sandbags, yeah.
Let me just tell you, bare knuckle, this is Mahach FC, bare knuckle fighting, 1 p.m. Eastern time on Saturday, Fight TV. You can find it. I think it's only $9.99. And that might be Canadian, so it might be even cheaper. So $9.99 Canadian, and he's in the main event against a silver, Olympic silver medalist in boxing, Dennis Baranchik, who was 15-0 at the threshold. So this is a real fight. And yes, they will be surrounded by
sandbags. Artem will never say turn down a fight. Our former colleague PC Carroll would say, because he kept trying to get in the UFC, and Sean Shelby would be like, just win two more, win two in a row. And then he just booked two fights in 2 weeks just because he wanted to plow through them. And he would fly to countries without coaches just to fight people. About that life.
Yeah, and Casey, they will not be wearing jeans. I don't know if you've seen them.
You don't get paid unless you're wearing jeans.
I literally asked him, will you be wearing jeans? He says they'll probably be wearing more traditional shorts or boxing shorts. There will be no jeans.
So jeans shorts, you're saying.
The sandbags he's going to use in the fight, too. Not like hit him with it, but like it'll corner him and like, I don't know, strangle him over. I'm not sure. I don't know how the league works. But Roberto Barrientos in the comments says, Artem the GOAT needs to fight MMA again. He told me he's not ruled it out. He says that's still his number one, passion. He loves bare knuckle. He thinks bare knuckle is the future of combat sports, but he loves MMA. So fingers crossed. He was supposed to fight in MMA last December. COVID canceled that fight in Paris. So I think we will see him fight again. But Casey, I think we've gone quite a long time.
Real quick.
Send us, yeah, so let the listeners send us home.
Who's Jed?
Who?
Don't know.
I have literally no who Jed is.
I think it's a typo.
Well, that's all the time we have here, folks. Yeah. Thank you for joining us. I do not know who Scott McCrate is talking about. I'm sure he's a very nice man, or actually probably not based on his name. But thank you for joining us on the preview show today. Mike Heck, I assume, will be back next week. He is covering BKFC, by the way, guys.
Yeah, tonight.
He might be back for the post show tomorrow.
Yeah.
And will he be on the pre? Can I tell people he'll be on the pre-fight, Jose? Or is that
no? Because that's still up in the air. So I don't want to give people their hopes up. So TBD, but not looking likely.
I will probably be there. Jose, will you be there?
If you ask nicely.
Okay, Casey, I assume you will be there. Either way, someone will be here to answer your pre-fight questions. 3:30 p.m. Eastern Time, 12:30 Pacific Time. Preliminaries are scheduled to start at 4 p.m. ET, fingers crossed, main card at 7 p.m. ET for UFC Vegas 32. Be there. We're going to be there, guys. Thank you.
Bret Hart versus Jimmy Savage. Fight of the night.
A feeling married a human man. A human man married a feeling this week.
Happy birthday, AK.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
The PFL is live from Chicago, April 19th, with welterweights and featherweights taking center stage. In the main event, former Bellator welterweight champion Andrei Kereshkov takes on knockout artist Magomed Umalatov. And 2022 PFL world champion Brendan Loughnane looks to start his 2024 off with the bang versus submission specialist Pedro Carvalho. Don't miss the action. Friday, April 19th, live at 10 p.m. Eastern Time on ESPN and ESPN+.
Support for this show comes from Wix Studio. Designers and devs, you might be able to do your thing better on Wix Studio, a web platform with everything you need to deliver bespoke sites hyper-efficiently. Design teams get a ton of smart features that can take the grind out of web creation without it costing per pixel control. Dev teams, you get a zero setup, developer-first environment combined with an AI code assistant and your preferred IDE for rapid deployment. Search Wix Studio today to explore the full range of features.